Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's Sunday afternoon. This is what? It's August the 9th, 2020. Thank you very much for tuning in. And we will talk to Jane Manette in just a moment. She has some ideas of how we can really improve our lives by having self-esteem and self-image and being able to do the kind of things that we need to do in this lifetime, in spite of all the challenges and difficulties. So Jane Manette will be with us in just a moment, and I'm going to start it out like, where is that? Right here. She'll be with us in a minute.
What difference would it make in your life if you could truly feel the confidence and the courage to finally step out of your shadow and be what you've always wanted to be and do what you've always wanted to do and live the life you truly deserve? Showing up in the world, living it exactly as you have dreamed. What would that feel like? What would that look like? Hello, welcome to Clarity, Confidence, and Impact. My name is Jane Manette, and I'm a leadership and executive coach and a rapid transformational therapist trained by the award-winning Marissa Peer. I help entrepreneurs, leaders, and high achievers to identify and eliminate the limiting beliefs that control them. Untruths are holding them back, keeping them stuck, and stopping them from living life on their terms. These limiting beliefs are usually based on just a few false assumptions that were embedded in our subconscious minds by well-meaning people in our lives before we were even 7 years old. And guess what? We are totally unaware of these beliefs. Our behavior is controlled not by what we want or deserve, but by what we believe. Some of the most common limiting beliefs are, I am not worthy, I am not enough, or what I want is not available to me. One may ask, why do I sabotage my efforts? Or say to themselves, no matter how hard I try, no matter how hard I work, I do not get the results I want. I'm sure if you pause and look around your life today, you will actually see where these limiting beliefs are showing up in your life right now. Maybe as fear or procrastination, self-criticism, or a lack of self-confidence. Maybe it's self-doubt or self-sabotage or any habit that interferes with the results you seek. These embedded beliefs are stopping you from living the life you deserve, the life of your dreams. RTT therapy is powerfully transformational and produces results that are fast and permanent. We can actually help you identify and then eradicate those limiting beliefs once and for all, leaving you to experience the freedom, creativity, and productivity you crave, and finally allowing you to get on track to live the life that you desire. I have worked with thousands of clients over the past 30 years as a trainer, coach, and therapist, and I am both proud and humbled to have helped each of them achieve amazing, life-changing results in a short period of time. And I would be honored to help you as well. If you are an entrepreneur, a leader, high achiever, in a high-powered position, and feeling held back, feeling stuck, click the button below and book your complimentary discovery session with me now. Let's talk about what's concerning you. What's holding you back? Let me show you how you can finally eliminate these crippling beliefs once and for all so you can actually live the life of your design. You will gain crystal clear vision and focus. You will be more productive. You will work less and earn more. You will increase your impact in the world and get more acknowledgement for the contributions you make. Hit the button below now and get ready for your transformation. See you on the other side. Bye for now.
Okay, Jane, thank you very much. Yeah, that was excellent. And so, good morning, good afternoon. I should say good afternoon, huh, Jane?
That's right. It's good afternoon, at least here on the East Coast, right?
Okay, so how's your day going?
Well, it's really nice and laid back and relaxed the way I like it on Sundays. Yeah, so it's been very beautiful so far.
A good Sunday, huh?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I take Sundays to kind of chill out and regroup.
Oh,
and
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. You deserve
it. No structure, no. Right, no structure, right, et cetera.
You owe it to yourself.
For sure. That's a part of what's required to keep us balanced and keep us, you know, in the best functioning condition. We definitely have to have downtime. And that's including downtime with no TV, media, devices, games, all of that. You know, just time with ourselves. So I get an extra dosage of that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. So
Sure.
Let's go back in your background just a bit for people who may not have heard you before. And by the way, I just played a clip from your website, which was excellent. And that website is what? www.
ClarityConfidenceImpact.com.
Okay, great.
Okay,
great.
Sure. Okay, so you want to talk about I'm one of 10 children. I was raised in the same city where Miles Davis grew up, in East St. Louis, Illinois. My family moved to Detroit, and there were more people in my high school than there were in my entire city. So that was a big adjustment. But the interesting thing is that when I got there, I had read all the classics. I'd read all the recommended reading. So they just had me record the classics for blind students. So I recorded and read into recordings so blind students could get that information. It was very interesting. I came from a small country town, and we didn't have a television for a long time. So there was this one little one-room library, and my goal was to read every book in the library. That was our big-time entertainment. It served me well. It's being well-read has its advantages, for sure. And then I went to undergraduate and graduate school in Michigan and majored in clinical psychology and went into private practice for a few years, and then left that and got involved in the success motivation industry in personal development, leadership, network marketing, had lots of fun and made lots of money, met people all over the world, traveled, had all kinds of awards and, you know, recognition of what I was really seeking at that time also. So then I kind of decided to go to spend 7 years in Africa, in West Africa, which was a phenomenal experience, got a real PhD in life and business. And I've been just really enjoying being an international, a citizen of the world. I'm an international citizen. I don't identify with being just from East St. Louis, just from Detroit, just from the United States. I really understand that I am a part of the human race, and the entire planet is my family. And traveling has helped me develop that perspective. And on that note, I'd like for everybody to look up Jane Elliott. She's a Caucasian woman who talks about the impact of racism. I'm sure you've heard of her. She did the exercise with brown-eyed, blue-eyed children and saw the impact that discrimination can have on such a very, very young age. Anyway, she says, and it's true, that there is no race, that there's only one race, human race. So I want us to keep that in mind as a concept as we have this discussion about what I'd like to talk about today is the inner versus the outer game for the Africans in the New World. You know, the inner game for black folks, as opposed to, there's a lot of discussion about the outer game. We need to be aware of that, participate, be involved, speak up, stand up, you know, and be conscious of that outer game. But it's really the inner game that's running your own show. It's your inner game that's determining your altitude, your aspiration, your accomplishment, the quality of your life, your lifestyle, your income, all of that's really based upon your inner game. So the training I got in clinical psychology helped me to be able to work with people at different levels, at the identity level, at the emotional level, conceptually, how people see themselves, how they see the world. And it really gave me a set of tools and skills that make me uniquely suited to do what I do. So I'm a rapid transformational therapist, and I'm a hypnotherapist also. You know, hypnosis has kind of gotten a bad rap. We think of it as parlor games, but actually hypnosis is the ability to get in a relaxed state where you can influence yourself. And that's mm-hmm. what I teach people how to do. When I was in private practice, they accused me all that I was treating the big threes, executives and their children and their wives. They all had this great Blue Cross insurance. And the clinic where I was working, they always criticized me for not using all of their Blue Cross benefits. They wanted me to bring every member of the family, exhaust all of their Blue Cross benefits. And what I did is I taught them to problem solve, taught them to establish warm, meaningful, honest relationships, and taught them to meditate. So once they knew how to basically manage their stress, improve the quality of their relationship, take responsibility for their own reactions to the world, they were ready to go. I didn't need to see them for 2 years, 3 years. So I was constantly being criticized for not seeing people long enough. And because I realized once people get some clarity and they get their confidence and their self-love and self-acceptance in place, they can move on. They can handle life. So the thing I'd like to talk about is why the inner game is so important. But before I get into that, I'd just like to tell you something you may not know. Our beliefs and how we see the world and what we think and what we believe and what we accept as true and what we agree with, those things were formed in us by the time we were 7 years of age. And we're not conscious of these beliefs. These beliefs are embedded in our subconscious minds. They were embedded by well-meaning relatives and friends and brothers and sisters and big mama and cousins, things people said to us when we were at a very impressionable age. And we accepted them as true because we didn't have the critical thinking skills to evaluate them or fact-check them. We couldn't Google the things that they were saying. So this is the body of knowledge that all of us are operating from, and we treat that body of knowledge as if we are true. Now, the way the Creator magnificently designed us, and it's a really important point to get, is that whatever you believe is true becomes your truth because there's a part of our brain that just narrows our perception so that we only see the things that we believe. So everything becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So you know how it is if you buy a new car. You know, you love this car, you've been watching it, you've been saving for it, you finally go and get it, and it looks like every other person is driving the same car. That's called selective perception. Well, there's a part of our brain that just allows us to only see what we believe. So what you believe is determining your life. What you accept as true is determining your life, not the actual reality. So if we take that bit of knowledge, and now let's have this discussion about people of African descent, self-concept, excellence, success, whatever we want to talk about, let's have it with that understanding that where you are in life, your bank account, your relationship, where you live, how you live, is all a reflection of a set of beliefs that you have endorsed as true. In order to change anything in your life, you've got to identify those beliefs. And what the work that I do is I identify them, then we eliminate and eradicate and delete anything that's not consistent with what your spoken present-day goals are. So, for example, let's say you want to be healthy and fit, okay, but you love sweets. You know, you just love dessert and you love sweets like me and you love these. Well, there's a conflict between what you say you want and what you really believe is good in life. Because what you really believe is good in life is all the desserts and sweet and fat and fattening foods that you can possibly get because that's how you define joy and security in your family as a child. Then despite all the books and lectures and vitamins and supplements that you take, that behavior isn't going to change until that belief changes. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just trying to tie it into Jane Elliott. For those individuals who don't know who she is, they can always Google Jane Elliott and maybe describe for us right after this little clip about what her focus is in terms of helping us to become better people.
I want every white person in this room who would be happy to be treated as this society in general treats our citizens, our black citizens. If you, as a white person, would be happy to receive the same treatment that our black citizens do in this society, please stand. You didn't understand the direction. If you, white folks, want to be treated the way blacks are in this society, stand. Nobody's standing here. That says very plainly that you know what's happening. You know you don't want it for you. I want to know why you're so willing to accept it or to allow it to happen for others.
Okay, that's a little clip by her so people can understand what she's saying. Take it from there.
Yeah, no, that's a very powerful thing, you know, with all the social consciousness that's going and the protests and the insistence that young people are having that we will not have two standards of living anymore. We will not have two sets of laws, two rules, one that guide white people or people of influence or people of means, and another that guide poor people or other people. With that going on, it's really, really important when people call themselves white, will say, well, Jane, I don't really understand. Can you explain to me what everybody's so upset about? I mean, I'm not responsible for slavery. I wasn't around then. My family never mistreated anyone. Why is everybody so upset? What is all this discussion? So I asked them a question. What did you hear in your household about black people when you were a child? That's what they're objecting to. So white people are fully aware, as Jane Elliott pointed out, of what the beliefs and thoughts and feelings that white people have about black people. They're very aware because they've heard it all their lives. They've heard it from their grandparents and their parents and their neighbors. Whether they personally felt that way or not, maybe they questioned it a little bit, but everybody they loved seemed to have decided that this group of people were less deserving, less intelligent, less educated, less capable, less honorable, had fewer values, all of those things. So white people are fully aware of what's said about black people in their presence. And so we cannot let them slide with that. They are aware. The question is about a question of humanity. Does my humanity allow me to see someone else suffer and I say nothing? Does my humanity allow me to see me gain advantage after advantage after advantage at other people's expense, and I think that's okay? But what I really want to talk about, and that's important, what I really want to talk about is what can we as black people do to ourselves, for our children, for our community, so that we have a healthy self-concept, that we have a positive, powerful self-esteem. We've come from some amazing people from all over the planet. We are here because our ancestors survived. They survived all kinds of conditions. And the challenge that we have is I think that we give how white people perceive us too much power. Oh, yeah, we need to change the policies and the rules, and we need to demand equal rights and equal pay. Absolutely. We need to have access to the same systems that they have. We don't have to have a white person commit a crime and a black person commit a crime for the same crime, the same city, the same time. The white person gets 3 years and the black person gets life. No, we can't stand for that. That's the outer game. But what I'm talking about is how you manage the outer game. And your life is a reflection of your inner game. And that's a reflection of your belief system, your confidence, your self-worth, your self-esteem. So how do we evaluate the impact that racism has had on us? Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Let's look at the stresses of everybody living in modern society. Let's just take people living in America, people we know. They're worried about their mortgage and their taxes and their credit rating. They're worried about the quality of the school for their kids. They're worried about, are their children eating proper food or is it contaminated food? Their water may be contaminated. Are they being overcharged for their expenses? They're worried about paying too much interest. They're worried about, is their spouse getting enough support, emotional support? Do the children have any kind of philosophical or spiritual life? How are they doing? I mean, these are all the concerns that everybody has, enough to just drive the average person in a simple society absolutely mad. Constant stress. Am I enough? Am I doing enough? Do I have enough? Do people like me? Do people approve of me? All of this constant seeking and searching approval on the outside. That's what the American pastime is, looking good, sounding good, driving good, pretending to be doing better off financially than you really are. All of that stuff creates stress. Now, that's what white people experience. Now, add all the additional stress that you experience if you're of African descent. You have all of those issues to contend with, plus a whole set of other issues. So if you are of African descent and you live in this society, you have had a lot of stress and probably trauma. And we handle it in different ways. We often don't talk about it in a constructive way. But all of that stress, plus being black, and don't be black and female and the single parent, or don't be black and male and with a police record, with a criminal record. You can't vote, you can't get a job. So we have a set of challenges that were created because of the racist system that we were brought into. But the question is, at what point do we take ownership for changing our own internal state, our own internal perception of ourselves? When do we decide that we're going to trust each other? When do we decide that we're going to do business with each other, that we're going to bank with each other? I mean, like, how many people listening to this call really have an account at a black bank? I was talking to someone very dear to me the other day. They said, well, I want to open an account at a black bank, but I'm afraid they might close them. I thought, okay.
Well,
I understood.
They just don't know the history of black banks. And
they don't.
They forgot about Black Wall Street and whatever, you know, the Rosewood. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that I'd like to talk about about black self-esteem, about black love, about black self-respect, about black self-discipline, about black resilience, and about black responsibility. That's what I'd like to talk about. Because the outer game is being well documented, and it's good. It's time. And we cannot pretend that this stuff doesn't go on. But how has all this affected us individually? How does it affect our life choices, where we live? How does it affect our educational level? How does it affect our aspiration level? How does it affect our lifestyle? One of the things that became really clear to me when I lived in West Africa is that we all, not just us, Americans confuse quality of life with lifestyle. Now, those are two different things. We think, you know, the bigger car, the nicer home, the bigger home, the nicer clothes, the more designer clothes, the more expensive liquor, the more leather, the more jewelry, whatever, you know, whatever we define as indicating success, that the better the lifestyle, we assume that as lifestyle progressed, that it enhanced quality of life. But that doesn't work out to be true. I saw people living in what you would or I would consider abject poverty, but they had a phenomenal quality of life. They had support. They had communion. They had family unity. They had values. They had systems that they lived by. They didn't have designer clothes. They didn't have a car. They didn't have the latest everything, but they had a quality of life that you and I would envy close up or from afar. So quality of life is what our grandparents and our great-grandparents had. And that's what they focused on, having a high quality of life. And somehow we got caught up in the commercials and the advertisements. Remember when we were little, we'd look at those Life magazines and we'd see those white people in the magazines at dinner time and they would be having meat at every meal. You know, when we grew up, we didn't have meat at every meal. We had chicken on Sundays. We had fish on Fridays. And every now and then we might have something in the middle of the week, you know, in a stew or soup or something. So we start thinking that, aha, if you are a good person, that means if you're a successful person, you're a good person. If you're a good person, that means you eat meat every day. Where is eating meat every day gotten us?
I know.
Where is eating dessert every day gotten us?
I know, that sugar, yeah.
So when we talk about self-responsibility, self-love, self-esteem, self-care, we have to talk about our diet. We have to talk about our choices. I mean, most of the. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a call coming in from Boca. And I didn't recognize it, but anyway.
I see.
Yeah, so I wanted to make sure it wasn't you. So look at the biggest challenges that are facing the African American community now.
All right.
At the fact that there's a greater
Where did we go with this? I mean, Martin Luther King, obviously, he addressed it about blacks suffering.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you remember the statement. Let's do this little clip by Martin so we can get right back to him. Martin.
The fact is that the Negro was a slave in this country for 244 years. That act, that was a willful thing that was done. The Negro was brought here in chains, treated in very inhuman fashion. And this led to the thingification of the Negro. So he was not looked upon as a person. He was not looked upon as a human being with the same status and worth as other human beings. And the other thing is that human beings cannot continue to do wrong without eventually rationalizing that wrong. So slavery was justified morally, biologically, theoretically, scientifically, everything else. And it seems to me that white America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. And that can never be overlooked. So I think these things are absolutely necessary. The other thing is that America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
So with all the discussions that we are having today, where do we go from here, Jane?
I think we're in a beautiful place. I think this is a great time to be alive. I think this is a wonderful time in history. I think that when we'll tell our great-great-grandchildren, oh, by the way, when I was talking about my background, I didn't tell you my most important credentials. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and a great-grandmother. I just want you to know that. Yes, right. So if I were in Africa, they would, you know, they would cook goats and have a big party. When you have three grandchildren in Africa, you become a queen. And you're regarded in high regard. We don't have those rituals here, but I am a great-grandmother and a grandmother. But no, he points out something, I mean, that we all know. We've experienced it. We've lived it. But what he also points out is how absolutely exceptional and amazing and resilient we are. Now imagine, no food, no land, no place, no seeds, nothing to cultivate food, no jobs, no nothing. You go from working for 240 years with no pay, you have no retirement, no 401k, no servants, nothing. You're just kicked out. And look how we've survived. Now I know we're not proud of everything, but look at who we are. Look at how we can take little or nothing and make something great out of it. Look at what our grandparents and great grandparents did to instill value in us and to make us feel worthy and capable and that we could do whatever we had to do to survive. So when I hear that, what I think about is Black resilience. And I think that's probably one of the things that my generation, and I'll talk about my generation, we put a little more emphasis on materialism than we did inner strength, I think. And I think our children and our grandchildren have suffered from it. The way Big Mama and them raised us is that you were not defined by how expensive your dress was or how many dresses you had or how many shirts you had. You were defined by the quality of your character, by how you conducted yourself, how you treated people, how you spoke to people, how you handled disappointment. We because of this sense of deficit that we felt, that we, you know, when you feel neglected, you tend to over consume. What we've done is we've overfed and overgiven and over pampered our children that they don't know how to handle disappointment and rejection. We don't need white people to love us. We love ourselves. We don't need their love, their acceptance. We don't need their understanding. We just need equal laws and equal treatment. But that love has to come from family, from community, and from home. That's where you learn to love yourself. So, yes, what our beautiful brother said is so true. But what is a big indication of how awesome and powerful we are, and we still are, and we still have that, we can create under all circumstances. I've seen the most amazing things in West Africa. I saw people produce and create with like nothing in my, I would be standing there with my mouth open saying, wow. We still have those abilities and those strengths. But if we don't cultivate our standard of living, our values, our compassion and treatment of each other, for example, let's just make it real. Every drug dealer, somebody knows in the community, somebody knows who's dealing drugs. Every person that's stealing, somebody in that family knows that they're stealing. When we decide that we're going to raise our standards high enough that we no longer excuse and look and turn our head away from destructive, non-functional behavior, even if it's in our own community, even if it's in our own family. You see, in the old days, you couldn't stay in Big Mama's house and Grandmama's house and be doing nothing wrong outside. You couldn't be causing shame on the family or hurting anybody or stealing from anybody or harming from anybody or doing anything destructive and stay in her house. Well, we've let so many of those standards slide because, well, you know, it's hard for them to get a job and he didn't run so good at school and the teacher didn't understand him. And so, yeah, he got caught up with the wrong crowd, but, you know, I'm praying for him. We changed our standards. So some of what we're seeing in our families and our communities, the black-on-black crime, what is that about? Life was precious to us. Look what we did just to survive. And now we have children committing suicide because they couldn't get the dress they wanted, go to the party they wanted to go to, because somebody said something mean to them. Because somebody said something bad on social media about them. Remember Russ, what Playing the Dozens was?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Remember how we were socialized? Tell people what Playing the Dozens was and what role it played in our survival.
Well, you know, that's in the streets of a Baltimore, New York, or Compton, California, or Detroit, Michigan, or even Harlem, New York. Back in the day when they played the dozen, they always talk about you, the way you were dressed, how you look, talk about your mama, your papa, those kind of issues. They make jokes about each other, if you will, the dozens.
But how did that ultimately help us survive in life?
I guess you looked at the what was happening. You kind of ignored it. You kind of let it run off. It's like letting water run off a duck's back in many instances if you didn't want to get into a tussle. You see me?
Yeah, you learn to accept criticism.
Absolutely.
You learn to accept criticism. You learn that you don't need everybody to love you and like you for you to be happy with yourself. That Playing the Dozen was a very powerful psychological exercise that children played with each other. And now, if somebody posts something on their social media that they don't like, and they don't like their outfit, they didn't like their hair, they didn't like their lipstick, they didn't like their outfit, they didn't like they played basketball, children want to end their lives? Well, somebody
right.
should have taught them to play the dozen.
well,
you would have learned.
They did that all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know a guy named Dr. Uma? Have you heard of Dr. Uma?
No, tell me about him.
Okay, well, let him speak for himself. Let's
mental
hear.
Health
sure.
issues in the black community. But Charlamagne, you got to be careful for a couple reasons. Number one, for black people, mental health is all about medicine. They don't give a damn about us.
Yeah,
they
want to
push Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, Cyclert, Risperdal, Depakote, Prozac, Paxil. So when you say mental health for black folks, Envy, you have to make sure you're talking about traditional talk therapy.
That's right.
Don't let them push them pills.
I agree.
Remember now, it was the psychologists who came up with the philosophical and theoretical rationale for segregation. A lot of people don't know this. Who was Adolf Hitler's propaganda minister? A psychologist by the name of Joseph Goebbels. Go to South Africa. Who engineered the apartheid regime? A white psychologist. Come to America. Who engineered and justified separate but equal and black inferiority and white superiority? It was psychologists. Henry H. Goddard at the top of that list and others. So the reason black people don't search out mental health, Charlamagne, ain't because we don't want it. But we recognize that the mental health establishment played a significant role in the destabilization of the black community. Did you know that up until 1965, 38 states didn't let black people have kids or get married if your IQ score was beneath a certain number? You see, and not only that, even if you come to me for therapy, Envy, if you tell me something that is potentially incriminating, by law, I have to break the therapist-client privilege and tell on you. So a lot of black mothers who need therapy ain't going, Charlamagne. You know why? Because if I tell them what happened to my child, it's hurting me. I need to talk to them. But if I tell them, they can take my children.
We can't talk to white folks. That's why we need black therapists.
That's why we need black therapists. Mm-hmm. And we need the black psychologists to get back into therapy, because a lot of black psychologists are not doing therapy. You know what they're doing? Testing and assessment. You know why? There's more money
in
testing and assessment in medicine than it is in the talk therapy. Mm. So that's something that we have to do.
All right.
James, this is where you come in. Tell me more
about
that.
Absolutely. He is absolutely right. I mean, most of my friends are psychologists that focus is on assessment and testing. They don't want to do what I do, one-on-one talking to young people, to mothers, to parents, to whomever. No, Black people have a good reason to be distrustful, not just of psychologists and therapy, but even of the medical profession. One of the reasons that we have some of the challenges is because we wait too late to go to the doctor. When the symptoms come, we ignore them. We say, well, maybe I'll feel better. I'll just rest a little bit, or I'll just take the afternoon off, or I won't. You know, we absolutely go to the doctor as a last resort. So that makes whatever the medical profession could have done by early detection and early treatment and early intervention, it puts us at the lower end of survival. So these are all the manifestations of the impact that racism has had on this system. Yes, people distrust psychologists, white psychologists. But, you know, in the extended family system that I really want to emphasize is a healthy model. It works in China. It works in Africa. It works in India. It works all over the world. In the extended family system, there was always somebody to talk to. If you got out of line, uncle would say something to you. Big mom was there. Grandmom was there. She'd sit you down and say, child, I see you having some problems. Now let's see what's going on. Let's talk about this. In the extended family, two young people who hardly knew who they were not responsible totally for raising children based upon their limited knowledge and their limited time. The entire family was a part of the raising of the children in the family, and we survived so much better. So he's absolutely right, but we need therapy. I want you to be clear about it. We need therapy, and we need black therapists who understand us and understand the limiting beliefs that we suffer from and how they're impacting us. You see, the kind of therapy that I do is totally different from what most do. When you go to therapy, most of them want to take a long, exhausting history. Then they want to talk about how you feel, talk about the problems for months and months and months. I don't do that. Most people that I see them three times. per issue. It takes about 3 sessions to resolve that particular issue. The reason, if you go to the dentist, you don't want him to say, well, I went to a dinner party and they had steak and I felt so bad because I couldn't chew the steak. Oh, my God, the abscess must be really giving you a hard time. And then I went and had something cold to drink and it made me ache and it was painful. You want the dentist to take the to remove the infected tooth. You don't want to talk about it for months and months and suffer the pain and be given medication to subdue the impact of the pain. You want to eradicate and delete and eliminate whatever is causing the problem. That's the kind of therapy that I do. I do therapy that identifies the belief, eliminates the belief, and then replaces it with what you want to believe and accomplish today. You see, if what you say and what you do and what you want and what you aspire to, is not in alignment with what you believe, you have a mess. You're saying one thing, but you're acting another way. And those who are listening, they know who they are. All of us have areas of our lives where we have phenomenal beliefs. Those are the areas where we excel. For example, Russ, you were told as a young child that you were a good talker and that you were a good speaker. You were told as a young child that you were smart, and so was I. And it shows. So we use our skills of communication, and we went to school, and we enhanced those. But we were also told some other limiting beliefs, and those are areas where life is more challenging to us. It may be in the area of relationship. It may be in health. It may be in finance. It may be in creative expression, whatever. All of us have wonderful beliefs that were installed in us and instilled in us, but we also have those that are holding us back. So if you are doing something repeatedly, it's not in your best interest, you've got a limiting belief, and you need to deal with it. If you, no matter how hard you work, you just don't accomplish what you want, you've got some sabotaging beliefs working against you. And how does that affect all of us as blacks? How does that affect us as parents, as leaders in our community? We really need to put serious emphasis on our inner game, our emotional and mental health, our well-being, our confidence, our self-esteem, our self-love. Look at the high incidence of diabetes in our. You don't catch diabetes. You don't catch arthritis. You don't catch high blood pressure. These are self-induced diseases. You see what I'm saying? We don't care. The reason the higher incidence of us are not surviving in this COVID is because of these underlying conditions. I mean, when I go to the doctor, they just assume I'm diabetic because of my age, because of my ethnic background. They ask me, I'm not on any medication. Well, what do you mean you're not on any medication? They start looking through their files. I said, I'm not on any. Well, how long have you had high blood pressure? I don't have high blood pressure. Well, how long have you been a diabetic? I'm not a diabetic. They just assume that those are the diseases that I suffer from. But I decided that what runs in my family and in my community, it don't run in me. I am not going to take on these diseases because it's fashionable or because it's common. And anyone that's suffering from diabetes or high blood pressure or arthritis or debilitating allergies or all these problems are self-induced. They're environmentally caused, and that environment is the way of thinking and your eating habits. So we have if we just focus on getting our act together, our internal game together. See, if white people like or don't like me, that's really not my business. I'm not all my self-esteem and my self-worth is not tied up into what white people think and feel and say about me. Because what? I know who I am. I know my value. I know my worth. So how they treat me, that's a different subject now. What laws they pass about me, that's a different subject. What interest rate I get, that's a different subject. But how they feel about me, I think we need to understand that how white people think and feel about us is really not our greatest concern. How we feel and think about ourselves and each other is our greatest concern.
How does your brand of therapy under Melissa Peel differ from the traditional
Peer.
One? Peer.
Oh,
peer.
Well, like I said, in traditional therapy, you talk about the problem for years and months and months and months.
Or
if you have a good insurance, you go, Right, you just drag it out. You just talk about how you feel about it. How did you feel when your uncle said that? How did you feel when your uncle approached you sexually? How did you feel when your teacher said that you couldn't spell and you would never be nothing? We don't focus on that because we know that it's what you believe that determines your reality. So once you change, identify the belief, which only takes a couple of hours, I see people normally for about a two-hour session, and then I see them for about three 1 hour coaching sessions. That's typically what it takes per issue. Because once that belief is uprooted, then it no longer has any controlling power over you. So it's what you believe about yourself is your reality.
True. Does it go back to the material that we've been reading, Earl Nightingale, The Stranger's Secret, and I can, what you think about, you bring about like this?
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Some years ago, the late Nobel Prize-winning Dr. Albert Schweitzer was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, "Doctor, what's wrong with men today?" And the great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, "Men simply don't think." It's about this that I want to talk with you. We live today in a golden age. This is an era that man has looked forward to, dreamed of, and worked toward for thousands of years. But since it's here, we pretty well take it for granted. We in America are particularly fortunate to live in the richest land that ever existed on the face of the earth, a land of abundant opportunity for everyone. But do you know what happens? Well, let's take 100 men who start even at the age of 25. Do you have any idea what will happen to those men by the time they're 65? These 100 men who all start even at the age of 25 believe they're going to be successful. If you asked any one of these men if he wanted to be a success, he'd tell you he did. And you'd notice that he was eager toward life, that there was a certain sparkle to his eye, an erectness to his carriage, and life seemed like a pretty interesting adventure to him. But by the time they're 65, one will be rich. Four will be financially independent. Five will still be working. 54 will be broke.
So I just wanted to say that fits in with what you're doing in terms of your confidence and your helping people to think differently about themselves. Is that right? I mean, we fall into that category?
Yeah, absolutely. And he talked about how a man thinks, and I'm saying it's really deeper than how he thinks is what he believes.
Oh,
you
I see.
Your belief is your gospel, not what you think. See, it's not your opinion about life.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you believe
mm-hmm.
about life that determines mm-hmm. your belief is your gospel. Whatever you believe about yourself, that's your gospel. That's your truth. And he's right. He's right. And he was talking about white men then. So
right.
Imagine.
True.
Right. He was talking about white men. He wasn't talking about us. He was talking about white men. I was in a training course, and they asked me to do a presentation, and I did a presentation on the fact that the average white male millionaire in America was 60 years old before he became a millionaire. And people were shocked by that. They were just totally shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the average white man is 59, 60 years old before he becomes a millionaire, and look at all the challenges and limiting beliefs he's had to go through and eliminate and trial and error and try to get mentors and duplicate and all the things he tried and didn't work and started and restarted, all the losses and setbacks he's had to deal with. How do you think it affects, what do you think aspiration, financial aspirations affect the black family or the black male or the black female? We have all those issues and we have additional ones. One of the things, and I want to talk about health, is that health is really precious. It's when you're 30, you just assume you're going to live forever and you're going to be healthy and everything's going to be fine. But health is really one of the biggest areas that's affecting us, mental and physical health. Because if you want to be wealthy, you definitely have to invest in your health. And almost to be healthy, you almost need to be wealthy these days. I look at all the supplements I take and all the special foods that I eat and how expensive it is to shop at some of these designer gourmet organic stores. But I do it because I value my health. I value that more than a new pair of designer shoes or a designer purse or the latest model of a car. But if you don't feel good about yourself, and you feel inadequate, and you feel that others don't approve of you or acknowledge you or see you or feel you or get you, there's an emphasis to dress up on the outside, make the outside look real good, wear the most expensive shoes, the most expensive purse, the most expensive outfit, drive the most expensive car that you can drive. So the emphasis is on looking good as opposed to being good and feeling good. We are the most excessive consumers on the planet. I mean, we as African Americans in this country, and I want to break that down. We spend a greater amount of, first of all, our expendable income is nothing like our white counterparts. We know that. But of the money that comes in our hands, we spend more of it on consumer items than we do on basics, on investments or acquiring assets. We spend the greatest amount of our money, the money that cash that comes in our hand, on consumer items. And this is who we're making everybody rich in this country. So we talk about how we 1.1 trillion, 1.5 trillion, 1.4 trillion, whatever the figure is, of money that mm-hmm. we as the people handle. It doesn't mean anything because we get it on Friday and it's gone on Saturday. And by Monday, we're broke again because we don't understand economics. So there's no sense in talking to black people about being wealthy and being rich if they don't value their health. And they can't value their health if they don't love themselves. And they can't love themselves if they still believe that they're dirty, they're bad, they're evil, they have low quality, of low character. So how you feel about yourself determines how you treat yourself. And self-care will determine, because you need longevity and endurance to be wealthy. You need persistence. You need to be able to overcome objection. You need to be able to not give people power over you. You need to retain your own personal power and not look to everybody else for approval. Millionaires are a very unique group of people. They're people that don't value your opinion as much as they value their own. They trust their own inner wisdom, and they listen to their own gut. They don't allow other people's opinion to define them. Well, if you're out seeking approval and seeking acknowledgement and dressing for success and dressing for flash, then you're outer oriented. You don't have that inner game in place. So how you feel about yourself affects your health, affects your wealth, affects your family. I go into homes and I see the kids have the latest game. They got big old, the TVs take up the whole side of the wall in the living room, and I don't see a book anywhere. Now, why is that? That's a reflection of values, standards, and self-concept.
Okay,
I remember giving a young man a book for Christmas. And he said, I don't want no book.
I can imagine.
No book.
I could imagine. But I think that's turning around a bit. I'm looking at the book called The Wealth Choice by Dennis Kimbrough.
Yes.
Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. He took 7 years to write this book. And he documented that in the United States, they are right now today at least 35,000 black millionaires and about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 billionaires who are black, and Robert Smith, who paid the tab for the people at Morehouse College when he did the address there for commencement.
Sure.
But so that's turning around. I think, and I'm looking at the younger people, and they are leaning. For instance, here's another statistic that's going to be hard for a lot of people to believe. But right now, 1,700 people become a millionaire every day in the United States, according to statistics. 1,700 people a day. So now they say if you punch that up and do the statistics, you'll see that there are about 10 million millionaires in the United States today, growing at the rate of 1,700 more each and every day. So I think things are beginning to turn around. What do you think?
Well, let's look at the numbers. You said there are 30.
Okay.
How many black millionaires you say there are?
Well, in his book, he took 7 years to research that. He said 35,000.
Okay, so
I know that.
So, and how many and how many millionaires are there?
Oh, I don't know.
We're at least 10.
About 10 million. 10 million.
Okay.
So far.
So we should. So there should at least be a million of us, because at least we're at least 10% of the population.
True. Well, I think we're running behind because of the fact that, you know, you have the Black Wall Street, you have the Roswell, I mean, the Rosewood, Florida incident. Those things have happened in our history, right? Are you familiar with those incidents, right?
Very familiar with our history. Very familiar with those incidents. But I have a different explanation.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that now these are friends of mine who are very wealthy. Let's talk about my white friends who are very wealthy first.
Okay.
They grew up in a family where money and investment and assets were discussed at the dinner table. They were expected to do well. They were expected to do well and to make a contribution to society. It was a given that they would be successful. And they didn't necessarily, they're not necessarily flashy. In fact, they're quite conservative in their presentation. I think that as we teach the principles of health, the principles of self-discipline, the principles of positive self-image, the principles of self-love and self-acceptance and self-responsibility, we have to teach principles of economics. And
right.
We just as a people don't understand capitalism. Because if we understood capitalism, we would, all of us would have our money in black banks. I'm not saying we wouldn't have some if we wanted some small amount left over in their banks, but we would buy from each other. We would drive an extra block or two to go buy our fruits and vegetables from where the black farmers or the black market is.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't understand economics. For example, if a dollar passes 12, it passes 12, 13 times in the Hispanic community. They buy the butcher, then they go to the beauty parlor buys her fish from the fish man, then the fish man takes his money and buys the lumber, and then the lumber guy. Everybody's buying from each other, so that same dollar is circulating almost as much as it is in the Jewish community, in the Hispanic community. And look how they're growing financially.
Yeah, I think you're right. Look, Malcolm X spoke to that issue, right? Remember?
Yeah, he
back
did.
In the day,
yes, he did. Yeah.
Okay.
In the 20-year anniversary of the March on Washington, the cry was jobs and justice. Justice. We are now in 2010. And what is the cry?
Jobs and justice.
Well, wait a minute. How long?
Not long.
Are you going to sit around begging white people to do for us what we have the power to do for ourselves?
Okay. That's your third time with the nation.
Yeah.
Right.
My point exactly. Let me tell what I know, the people I know. Let me talk not about what I read. I know people
sure.
that have gone into debt to send their high school graduates to college to major in something where there'll be no job, and to expect the child to go and ask a white man for a job. That is the most backward, outdated, outmoded thing I can imagine. I tried to explain them. It would be better to take a small investment, teach your child how to start a business, and then help them start the business. Oh, no, we can't start no business. No, he got to get a good job. But I said, but there are no good jobs, and they're not going to be any good jobs. So we have been so brainwashed to let somebody else have the big responsibility, and we just come and do our little part and get our paycheck on Friday. If we're still talking about jobs in 2020, we have missed the boat. First of all, these 50 million people that are out work, 50% of them are never going back to a job. That's over.
No.
Once these
no
companies
way.
Realize
no
that they can get you to work, one person to do the job of four people, and they don't even have to have a place for you to work at work. They can have you work at home and use your own lights and your own water and your own air conditioning for you to work and make them money. They're not going to have these big buildings where you come and they have to house you. So these people who've been telling their children, it was like it was supposed to be in the small print. If you get a good education, you'll have a good job, and you'll have a good life. Lie.
Okay.
Lie.
All right.
Lie.
All right. Especially
what we have
now.
To teach our children is how to start businesses and how to hire each other.
Okay.
And how to
Listen.
Serve each other.
Point taken. Listen. The latest news in a cut last a few days ago. Companies that will let employees work from home indefinitely are now, listen to this, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, Hitachi, Coinbank, MasterCard, Zillow, Nielsen Research Center, Nationwide Insurance Company. I could keep on going. They have now told all of their employees, don't worry about coming back to a building. You can work for us from home. Right now, approximately 20 million stores will be closing between now and the end of this year. And we're talking about closing 200 McDonald's, 265 Walmarts, Macy's, Sears, on and on, Costco. They're going to start closing. Now, even airlines will be laying off starting in October, a couple of months from now. Now, American Airlines says we will lay off 36,000 people, pilots and those ladies who walk up and down the aisles, or gentlemen, followed by Delta with 25,000 people. Other airlines, you know, Southwest, 17,000 people. It's changing now so that we are going to have to critically start talking about working from home. So that old mantra, be a good person, study real hard, go to school, get your degree, and then get that good job and stay there 30, 40, 50 years, it's out of the window. So I just want to confirm what you are saying. So how do we, I mean, out of desperation, we are going to have to do something, right? Is that right? Other than
absolutely. Now, one of the things that when I got involved in network marketing back in 1980, and I did a little research, and the research that I did, that this is what they were saying about Black people in network marketing. They were great consumers. They bought the products, but they were not good business builders. Now, listen to this. That if you want to build an organization fast, get a lot of Black people in it, but understand they're not going to rise to the top. They're not going to become the top earners, but they consume like nobody's business because everybody knows that we love to spend money. That's one of our pastimes. And if we like something, we spend it. A friend of mine, who I won't name the country, a friend of mine who from a foreign country said his government put on a training seminar every year telling people how to go to America and get rich. He said that if a packet of toilet tissue has four rolls and you can buy that pack of toilet tissue for $1, that an African American would spend $1 for a single roll at a convenience store. You know who runs the convenience stores?
True.
Because they prefer convenience over value. So they were taught by their government. They were given seminars what products to sell, how to price them. Now, this is in another country. They're teaching their people how to come here and get rich, and you have to have your stores in the middle of their neighborhood.
I understand.
So
okay.
We were telling our children while they're doing this. They came over here with $50 in a cardboard suitcase. We were telling our children to get a job and belittling them if they didn't have a job. Telling them, oh, no, you can't have no business. What do you mean you're going to start some business? And no, you better go get a job. So we actually have perpetuated a set of values based upon racism and elitism and all kinds of stuff, classism. We have perpetuated a set of dysfunctional beliefs that are interfering with our survival right now. But there's some good news. I'm here with some good news. We are uniquely suited to work from home. We have special creative abilities. We connect easily with people. We love connection. We move with a group. We can identify with each other once we have a common goal. So Black people do extremely well in network marketing. And network marketing is the best business for the average Black person to get started at. No degree required, no education, no certificate, no license. You could have gotten out of the pen last week and signed up in something this week.
True.
Just like the big white guys, they filed bankruptcy. They bankrupt a company. They filed bankruptcy on Monday and form a new corporation on Tuesday. You don't even have to have a corporation to do it. All you have to do is learn how to communicate the value and the benefits of your service or project. And do we know how to talk? So we are uniquely suited. We just need, and this is why I'm listening to myself as I'm saying I don't have time for network marketing. We need the right training program to teach black people how to excel. And the reason I know this is I taught Haitians who didn't read or write any language. They couldn't read or write English or French or Spanish or Creole even. They could speak Creole, but they couldn't write it. And I taught them how to make $10,000 a month in the 80s here in Miami. So if I could teach them with no written skills, most black people can read and write, I could teach anybody how to do it. And not just that I can teach it. There are teachers far better than me. The systems are in place. So I think that we have to tell, we have to shout from the rooftops, you need to start your own business. You need to start your home-based business. Now, if you cook, if you love to bake, bake. If you love to cook, cook. If you love to organize, if you love to clean up apartments, if you're good at organizing people's space, that's how Kim Kardashian got started, organizing people's closets.
True.
If you're good at helping people style their wardrobes, young women who are very stylish, they can go in and help an executive woman pull her wardrobe together for the whole week, pull the accessories together, pull everything together, put it in. Whatever your superpower is, and you know what I mean by superpower? That thing that God gave you. God put his signature on everybody. There's something that each of us do better than everybody else. We can wake up doing it. We love doing it. We don't need any special training or motivation. We just love it, and when we do it well. That's what you need to start your business at. And if you don't know what that superpower is, hang around somebody who knows their superpower and imitate them until you know yours.
Well, you can help people identify their purpose, right, in life.
Oh, in an hour and a half session.
Is that right? Okay.
In an hour and a half, I can get people clarity about what their real passion is in life. Because, see, the educational system was designed by the Industrial Revolution, and it was designed to make you an employee, not an employer. All the examples were if Johnny works for the warehouse and he works 4 days a week after school, 4 days a week after school for 3 hours, and he makes 20 cents an hour. How much money does he make a week? A friend of mine, father sent the boy to a private school and sent the girl to public school. The boy came home with examples. If you invest 20% of your money into a stock that's paying 10% and you're earning this, what will your net results be? His examples were about making money, creating money, generating wealth, and her examples were about working a job. Public schools are designed to produce laborers, employees, not employers. So by the time you've been programmed from elementary school to junior high, your sense of self is warped by then. You don't see yourself. I ask people in an exercise I do, see yourself in a retail establishment. Now you're standing in front of the cash register. I ask them, which side of the cash register are you on? They're always on the side paying. The people who went to the good schools on the side where they're receiving the money. So we have been programmed, just like we've been programmed to work for somebody and think that's more honorable. And there's nothing the matter with working for somebody. God, we have to have pilots and nurses and doctors and emergency help. We have to have these people. There's nothing wrong with work. But if you think that's the solution for your family, you have missed the boat. You've got to start a business, and a home-based business is good so everybody in the family can get involved. One of my relatives recently started a family business, and her granddaughter is helping. Her granddaughter is 5, and she helps out in the business. She has her little responsibility of what she does, and it's teaching such amazing values, and it's so, so very rewarding. So I think we're great at home-based businesses. I think we're the best at it.
Your friend, Les Brown, he got started in network marketing, remember?
Yeah, he was in my organization. He was one of my distributors.
Here's the way he says it, and then we'll come right back.
Because Bob Boyd, who sponsored me out of Columbus, Ohio, in Bestline Products, I thought he was the consummate presenter and very polished and articulate and a meticulous dresser. And I wasn't any of that. I'm cornbread. I didn't have any of that. And I was probably in the business for 4 or 5 years before I presented.
Wow.
Because I was so intimidated by him and Jim, the other guy brought me in. When I saw Jim Rowan and a guy named
Chuck Simmons and Bill Bailey. I was just saying, whoa.
Yeah, how do you compete with that?
Yeah, that, you know, when I can do it like that, then I'll do it. But see, you don't have to be great to get started. You have to get started to be great. And so I had to be willing to stand up. And I remember the first time I stood up, and my mind said, no. I couldn't think at all. And he had to rescue me. I had to go to the bathroom right away. So when I think about that, presenting part, you know, I think I'm gonna write a book called Present and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
Because it changed my life, and I kept working at it, and I was patient, and I was persistent, and I got better and better, and I was coachable. I was willing to be coached. I believe ask for help, not because you're weak, but because you want to remain strong. And so I asked for help. Help me do this. Help me. And fortunately, I had a supportive team that helped me. And I got better and better and better. I did not know that it would lead to what I'm doing right now. And so the ability to present, it changes your life.
Mm-hmm.
The personal development and the relationship and the presentation skills, it gives you the equipment you need to navigate this global economy. And that's what this industry does.
And so here we are. Here we are. A new day, huh?
Yeah,
Jane.
a new day. So yeah, I think this is an exciting time to be alive. I'm happy that I'm alive. I'm happy that I've got a front row seat to the social and civil changes that are happening, and I'm happy that people are waking up to the fact that they are responsible for their own lives. They're responsible for the quality of their lives, and that people are questioning. And the nice thing about this COVID-19 is giving people some time on their hands to think and to reflect. And to really reevaluate their values, you know, how much emphasis they're putting on materialism versus quality of life, you know, how confused they are with this whole lifestyle versus quality of life, you know, how much emphasis are they putting on looking good versus really cultivating character in their children. So I think there's certainly a big downside to this COVID madness, but there's certainly an upside. It's giving people time to reflect. Giving people time to be together and communicate and have meals together and to cook together. You know, one of the best times of my life was when I was in the kitchen with my mother, and she's cooking and I'm helping, and I just was licking the spoon part. That was a good part too. But being there and doing and helping and talking and listening to her tell the stories about her childhood and her parents and her grandparents, it made an invaluable impression on me. So people have time on their hands. And that's the nice thing. I think every mother should have a home-based business. You set your own hours. You're home when your kids need to be home. And the research is clear. Women make up to 400% more money when they become self-employed. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. And everybody say, well, what about my benefits? What about my benefits? Well, if you're making 400% or even 200% more, you can afford to pay your own health insurance. So we need to purge the laborer in us, those of us who are aspiring entrepreneurs. We need to get rid of and eradicate that part of us that wants somebody else to figure it out. We just want to show up, do our little part, and get our check on Friday. That thinking is no longer being supported. The Industrial Revolution is over. The information age is in, and the blending of information age and technology, they just don't need as many laborers as they used to. What they need are service providers. They need people that are adding specific value to other people.
But when you saw the book, you saw the documentary Rise movie by Eric Worre, right?
Oh,
and it talks
for
about
sure.
That. All right, talk about that for a bit, because I think every network marketer or home-based business entrepreneur needs to be looking at that and sharing it with their friends, relatives, and acquaintances. Talk about that for a minute before we close.
Well, the reality is that once you accept the fact that you were sold a bill of goods about how life was supposed to be, you were sold a bill of goods as to what kind of education you should do and what that education was going to do for you. And you see, it was a bunch of lies. It was a bunch of promotion. And who did it serve? And now that you realize a lot of the things that you've been trained to do and taught to do may not be serving your best interests, and the people's best interests it was serving don't want your time anymore, it's time to wake up. It served them at a time, but they don't want you anymore. And see, their contract with you is when it's no longer good to me, it's finished with you. So it's not like, okay, I came to work for you for 20 years and now you don't need me, but you're going to take care of me for another 10 years? Get out of here. They're not doing that. So
no,
now that the big companies don't need you as a laborer anymore, that doesn't mean you're not valuable. That doesn't mean you're not intelligent. That doesn't mean you don't have valuable skills. But it's now time to structure those skills and take those skills and be a part of a collective. The most beautiful part of network marketing is the support, the training, and the encouragement that you get, and that you get a chance to see a live example accomplished and do the things that you want to do. They're not smarter than you. They're not more educated than you. They're not more motivated or driven than you. They're not better speakers than you. But you see somebody who gets their income to $10,000 a month, to $20,000 a month, to $30,000 a month, or just $3,000 a month, whatever your aspiration is. And having that live example and rubbing shoulders and being with them and talking to them and having a mentor. And network marketers, you get models and you get mentors. You see, in order to succeed, you need models and you need mentors. And that's what network marketing allows you to do. And you can start where you are. It doesn't require a big cash outlay. What it requires is a burning desire and being teachable. If you are teachable and coachable, you can make $1 million in network marketing. If you're teachable and coachable, and if you learn how to listen, that's a big one. We could have a whole session on listening. 25% of the people speak like you and understand like you. 75% of the people don't. So if you talk the same way to everybody all the time, you're blowing 75% of the people all the time.
I see.
So once you learn to mirror and match other people's language styles, there's how fast, how loud, once you learn to mirror and match other people's speaking style, and you learn that and you're coachable and you're teachable and you have a burning desire for independence or success, doesn't even have to be for money. Some people just have a burning desire to be independent. That was mine, a burning desire for success. I was never so concerned about the money. The money just was a consequence of the effort that I put out. So, yes, in the movie Rise, you can be what you want to be. You can have what you want to have if you have a mentor and if you have models, people showing you how to do it.
And it talked about how extensive the industry is, $200 billion, at least approaching that. And even in the United States, 87% of the people involved, so 20 million or plus, produce $33 billion in goods and services. So it's just, that's going to double and quadruple in the next 5 or 10 years, obviously.
Well, I think it's going to do faster than that because where are these people being laid off for Delta and where are they going, United? Where are these people that are being laid off from Walmart and that? They're going to get involved in network marketing. They're going to figure out a way to start a home-based business. Everybody's using toothpaste and shampoo and conditioner and taking supplements. And everybody's using these products anyway. Instead of buying them from big business, they'll be buying them from each other. And it's very profitable. It's very doable. How to do it is well documented. Lots of people that look like you and I are doing it and have done it very well.
Okay.
So
there are a few people who are listening. And Vanette, she's online. Vanette, do you have any questions of Jane Manette?
Or comments.
Anybody.
I have a question. This is Adrian in New Jersey.
Go right ahead.
Oh, this is a phenomenal show. I love it. Anyway, my question is, in terms of the beliefs, right, when you consider that, the other colors have their baggage and their beliefs and we have double or triple, at what point is the belief so entrenched that you can't affect it? Can anybody change their beliefs? Is it
yes.
the desire
yes.
to change
yes.
the belief that makes it change?
Yes.
That's what
yes.
I wanted to know.
What I'm good question, really good question. Any belief can be altered. Any belief can be changed. Any belief. Now, most people don't have the skills to change their belief or the skills or the ability to identify what the underlying belief is. They may see the manifestation of the belief, but they don't really understand what the underlying belief is. But any belief can be modified. Any belief can be installed. If there's something you want to believe, you can install that belief through repetition and intensity. You can just stand in a mirror and tell yourself every day that you're fabulous, you're wonderful, you're gifted, you're talented, you're blessed, and you're highly favored. And you can say that with enough repetition and enough emotion and enough intensity, you will start to believe it. So what you say to yourself is who you are. It's not what other people say about you. It's what you say to yourself that determines your belief. So, yes, you can change a belief and you can uninstall beliefs. And it's a simple skill, but you already have the skills to install new beliefs. What you probably don't have the skill to do is identify and eradicate those beliefs that are not in your conscious awareness. That's where I come in. Did I answer your question?
Oh, yes, very good. And I identify with the reading, because the reading is the thing that took me out of my environment. So reading those books gave me another way to think about life.
Mm-hmm.
So reading
sure.
is critically important to this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. And your website is Jane. What's your website again?
It is www.clarityconfidenceimpact.com. Clarityconfidenceimpact.com.
Okay. And for those individuals who might just want to give you a call, what's that number?
954-260-4017. 954-260-4017.
Okay. Well, the lines have opened, go ahead.
Yeah, if there are any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them. Feel free to call. What's that number they should call, Russ?
Your number. You mean
no I meant
number?
Okay, if they want it. Yeah, my number is 954-260-4017. But if they wanted to call any comments or questions, what number do they call?
Your number. That's
okay.
A good number.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. I mean, they can always call me, you know, whenever. You know.
Sure.
But
Andrea called, I wondered if there were other callers, right? Right.
All right. But let me do this, and then we come back and we can close out. But what I want to do is just for them to understand what you do. And when we come back to close out, I want you to explain what we already heard. Listen to this.
Okay.
What difference would it make in your life if you could truly feel the confidence and the courage to finally step out of your shadow and be what you've always wanted to be and do what you've always wanted to do and live the life you truly deserve? Showing up in the world, living it exactly as you have dreamed. What would that feel like? What would that look like? Hello, welcome to Clarity, Confidence, and Impact. My name is Jane Manette, and I'm a leadership and executive coach and a rapid transformational therapist trained by the award-winning Marissa Peer. I help entrepreneurs, leaders, and high achievers to identify and eliminate the limiting beliefs that control them. Untruths are holding them back, keeping them stuck, and stopping them from living life on their terms. These limiting beliefs are usually based on just a few false assumptions that were embedded in our subconscious minds by well-meaning people in our lives before we were even 7 years old. And guess what? We are totally unaware of these beliefs. Our behavior is controlled not by what we want or deserve, but by what we believe. Some of the most common limiting beliefs are, I am not worthy. I am not enough. Or what I want is not available to me. One may ask, why do I sabotage my efforts? Or say to themselves, no matter how hard I try, no matter how hard I work, I do not get the results I want. I'm sure if you pause and look around your life today, you will actually see where these limiting beliefs are showing up in your life right now. Maybe as fear or procrastination, self-criticism, or a lack of self-confidence. Maybe it's self-doubt or self-sabotage or any habit that interferes with the results you seek. These embedded beliefs are stopping you from living the life you deserve, the life of your dreams. RTT therapy is powerfully transformational and produces results that are fast and permanent. We can actually help you identify and then eradicate those limiting beliefs once and for all, leaving you to experience the freedom, creativity, and productivity you crave, and finally allowing you to get on track to live the life that you desire. I have worked with thousands of clients over the past 30 years as a trainer, coach, and therapist, and I am both proud and humbled to have helped each of them achieve amazing, life-changing results in a short period of time. And I would be honored to help you as well. If you are an entrepreneur, a leader, high achiever, in a high-powered position, and feeling held back, feeling stuck, click the button below and book your complimentary discovery session with me now. Let's talk about what's concerning you, what's holding you back. Let me show you how you can finally eliminate these crippling beliefs once and for all, so you can actually live the life of your design. You will gain crystal clear vision and focus. You will be more productive. You will work less and earn more. You will increase your impact in the world and get more acknowledgement for the contributions you make. Hit the button below now and get ready for your transformation. See you on the other side. Bye for now.
Yep. Okay. Adrian, did you have any comments listening to that? And well, Jane, in real simple 1-2-3 English, do you have some testimonies?
I just I like the reinforcement of the inner game. You know, what we do with our inner life is 10,000 times more important than what the outside world is telling us. And that's the area that's going to have the most impact on our future, is our inner game. And that's
okay.
What needs to be focused on. So that's what I got from it.
Takeaway. Great. Very
Thank
powerful.
You.
Just that takeaway can change how you do everything. Yeah.
Yeah. She wants to be very successful in networking and building a business and becoming like people have done before her, like you have, as a matter of fact. When I met you back in 1985, you were making and I joined Forever Living with you. You were making what, $30,000 a month back in there? Yeah.
And you came in and like just shot like a rocket. You had me come to Baltimore. You put me on the radio. I invited people to come. We did a call of action. All kinds of people showed up, and you got to the top position in just a matter of days. I stayed there for about 4 or 5 days just processing everybody's orders and promotion. It was big fun.
Within 2 days, we had 18 supervisors.
Exactly.
That.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was record-breaking, you know?
Hundreds of people came to that meeting. Adrian, you got a sense of this thing?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I can understand about working on yourself, because my parents were both factory workers, and then I got a job working in the factory. And I was like, this sucks. So then I went to college, but some of my relatives were entrepreneurs. So that entrepreneur thing was always in my consciousness, and I've been seeking it ever since. So I know that you do become what you think about, but you really got to want it. Like Les Brown says, you got to be hungry, and it has to be like that kind of magnificent obsession. So I really appreciate, you know, the show and the history of what happened to us and what's happening right now. But still, it doesn't have to, you know, destroy our futures if we just switch and shift and focus on what we want and not what we don't want. So I just really thank both of you for the show.
I'm going to just give you a couple of exercises, since you called and you're so open and you're so motivated. I just want you to develop the habit of praising yourself, acknowledging yourself. I don't mean from any egotistical that you're better than anybody, but just acknowledge the goodness in you, the God in you. Acknowledge when you do something kind, just acknowledge that. When you do something loving, acknowledge yourself and acknowledge other people. Get in the habit of complimenting other people. For example, let's take a moment to compliment Russ Johnson. Russ is a very interesting person. He's a very beautiful person. But one of the things about him that I really love most is how willing he is to share his knowledge, and how willing he is, if there's any opportunity that Russ can see for him to lift someone up or empower someone or encourage someone, he's all in. His desire to inspire, empower, and encourage other people is noteworthy. So what you want to do, Adrian, you want to develop the habit of complimenting people. It can be on their appearance. It can be on their behavior, on the way they're dressed, on their tone of voice. Just get in the habit of anytime you see something positive in a human being, especially a black human being, compliment them. Now tell Russ everything you like about him.
I love how Russ gives us these, you know, stack of books a foot high to read, and all of the books that he's given me has just been amazing books. Just his personal development, business development, and the fact that he's into feed nutrition, I think that was a very smart choice. So I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you, Russ and Jane, and I just feel inspired by this call. And know that I follow in your instructions and reading the books, things are already getting better. So what you're saying is absolutely true. You do become think about. Absolutely.
Now I want you to do the second part of the exercise. Now I want you to tell us everything that's wonderful and great about you, and don't be shy. Tell us how wonderful you are, how terrific you are, and how you're wonderful and great. Tell us.
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, I am a health conscious. I try to encourage other people to improve their health. I seek to improve myself and others. I give back into my community. I do volunteer work in the community. I know it's not just about me. I know that we're here for a limited time, but I know that we could do a lot while we're here. And I also know that I have to keep my mind open to continue to learn and grow and listen to the advice of people that have been there before me.
Let me translate. You're saying that you're generous, you're kind, you're open, and you're receptive. Okay,
yes.
I want to keep it about you now, about you. I want you to keep it about you. You see how uncomfortable you are praising yourself?
Yes.
You see how difficult that was? Okay, so now I just want you to act like you got an audition for a play. And your audition is you've got to talk about everything that's wonderful about you with no apology. So just spurt it out. I'm kind. I'm beautiful. I'm loving. I'm helpful.
Okay.
I'm generous. Spurt it out. Give it to us again now.
All right. Okay, man, I'm so happy right now. I got this part, and I'm getting ready to travel to Australia. I'm going to have a party for my friend. I'm going to open up a health clinic, and it's going to be all things to help people heal, where you could go to have meditation, you could go to have anything that you want to heal the body naturally.
Sure.
That's my dream, to have a clinic like that. And I'm going to be able to really help a lot of people with feeling good, because if you have your energy and you feel good, you can do good. So I'm happy that I won this part in the play. It's going to enable me to fortify myself as far as my energy and my well-being so that I can continue to invite other people into this dynamic. So, you know, I'm really, really happy to be connected, to have the frequency and the grace to actually be here. This is a form of grace to be connected into this frequency. And, I acknowledge that. It's just a stumbling accident of circumstance, but now that I'm here, I just want to stay on this frequency. So I'm looking forward to connecting with you later, and I'm just going to continue to do the best I can to grow.
So I invite you to stand in the mirror every morning before you brush your teeth, and I want you to talk to yourself in the mirror, and I want you to say stuff like, I am wonderful, I am gifted, I am talented, I am driven, I am motivated, I'm inspired, I have phenomenal character, I have great judgment, I have wonderful work ethic. I am a beautiful, talented, dynamic, awesome person. That's the way I want you to talk to yourself in the mirror.
Wow.
Put it in the I am.
I like that.
Stand, Send them in there and just say, I am. And everything you, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. See, the subconscious mind doesn't deal with truth. It deals with belief. So you can see these people tell themselves stuff that's not true, but they believe it, and it's for them it's true. So tell yourself what you want to be. So tell yourself, I'm rich, I'm positive, I'm powerful, I'm energetic, I'm fantastic, I'm giving, I'm loving, I'm kind, I'm nurturing, I'm successful, I'm entrepreneurial, I'm organized. Whatever you need to hear, put that in your formula, and you tell yourself what you want to be, what you want to do, and what you want to have. And watch the magic.
Wow, that's phenomenal. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so
You're welcome. Well, Russ, as usual, you have been so kind and generous. I appreciate you giving us an opportunity just to share and chat like this. And I hope those that are listening have gotten something that they can use and take with them. And for those who want to talk to me, feel free to reach me at 954-260-4017. And, Russ, I love and appreciate you.
Okay, you take care. Hey, thanks, folks, for listening. I really appreciate it. Any other questions before we go? I see we have David with us. David, any questions of this young lady?
Or comments?
Witherspoon. But no, Mr. Minister. But anyway. But thank you very much.
What'd you call me to who?
Mr. Minister.
I'm good.
Mr. Minister.
I'm just a picture on the wall. Like Walmart. I'm just a picture on the wall because I'm not a fly. I'm a picture on the wall.
I heard that. I heard that loud and clear. Well, thanks very much for listening. I really appreciate it. So, Jane, I'll talk to you soon. Work
all right.
Home.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Happy birthday again.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care now.
I wonder what it would be like to work from home. With advances in technology, more and more people are looking for home-based jobs that could easily give them the flexibility of setting their own hours and perhaps find a better work-life balance.
It enables you to run your own business, be your own boss, but with the backing of another company that's there because you're selling their products or their services.
Wouldn't it be nice if your commute consisted of stepping to the kitchen for a cup of coffee, then into your home office? Well, thanks to the internet, plenty of people do it daily.
Best commute in town. Very short. Takes me about 30 seconds. We get to choose our own hours. It allows me to have the flexibility to do things with my wife and my daughter.
So there are real work-at-home jobs out there.
There is opportunities to work at home. You just need to find out what type of an opportunity you're best suited for and research it and pursue it.
For Money Talks, I'm Stacy Johnson.
Okay, that wraps it up. Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Have a good Sunday and take care of yourself and stay safe.